I'm gonna have to record it on my phone here. It didn't look like recording on the Zoom worked, so that's too bad. But it'll just be an audio for the podcast. So tell me a little bit about why you moved into co-housing as far as having children, because you had one child
at the time? No, my dad was 4 children already.
4?
Is that true? Yes. Yes, we moved in here with four children. Why did we want that? Because it seemed like a perfect way to grow up, because we knew that we couldn't be everything for the children and we wanted more grown-ups and more children in their lives.
Wonderful, wonderful. And I'm sorry, I forgot to introduce, if you could introduce yourself. And it sounds like you're a consultant. Do you work with co-housing communities?
Yeah, among others. So I'm a consultant for governance, and I teach a lot of meeting facilitation activities also. That's why I was late. Class went over.
That's fine.
And so I live in a co-housing community with 70 people in Massachusetts, 5 children. My work around governance is sociocracy training and consulting, so that's a lot of co-housing, yes, but also schools and even businesses and so on.
Very nice, very nice. Did you know that before you moved in, or that's something you learned at co-housing, was more how it really goes?
Yeah, I learned, yeah. Yes.
Very nice. So when you moved in, you wanted your children to no other adults. So how did that work with your expectations, and how did that go with your goals?
I think that part is perfect.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Each of my kids, I mean, they have a large age, or not so big actually, given that it's 5 of them. So the oldest is 17, youngest is almost 8 now. And they all have their set of grown-ups that they relate to. In particular, the younger ones, the older ones, not so much. But I remember, here's a little story, actually. My oldest, who was already 7 when we moved in here, 8, I don't quite get, somehow I'm not getting the ages right here, but something around that. And I do notice a difference there. The younger ones, they like really like soak it up while they're young, and they find all this co-housing thing normal. While the older ones, they have this little, there's a little bit of a barrier for them, though they don't mind too much, but it does seem different to be born into this. Anyway, but my oldest, I remember having to fill out a form for school, like emergency contact, right? So like, okay, so I asked her, like, okay, who do you want me to put on the form? Because she didn't really at that point in time have like the person that was the go-to person. And then she just said, I don't know anybody really. You know, and this was like a 15-year-old back then. This is not long ago. And I said, okay, listen, what I mean is, let's say you're really feeling crappy, you're scared, your arm is broken, you know, you threw up 2 times in the hallway, and they can't reach us, okay, who do you want them to call? And I thought that then she would back out, right? But instead, what she said, no, really anybody. That can't be, you know, how can that be? So then I ran a few names by her, and like, you know, you mean Mike? Oh yeah, yeah, Mike sounds good. And Nancy, yeah, that sounds good. Okay, I guess it's really true. I gave it my all to insist, you know, that she really thinks about it, trying to poke whether there was a limit, but there didn't seem to be one.
Very nice. So she trusted everybody's, and she felt that, yeah, so it really was a community, or is a community. I think that's, that's one of the greatest things of children being in co-housing and meeting lots of different people and lots of point of views. And now I have read, as teenagers, they kind of notice some of the skills that other adults have that maybe their parents don't.
Yes, definitely. There's definitely connections like that. I'm struggling to come up with a great example. But yeah, actually, my youngest, for example, we have a wood workshop here that is shared. So my youngest spends a lot of time there outside of COVID, but of, just having that, because that's not something I tend to do. And of course it's also half as exciting with your parents, right? Like with me, it's a chore. With somebody else, it's super cool. So How I guess that's what it is.
Now, I like that you said you wanted your children to know other adults. I think a lot of people move into co-housing hoping their children will have playmates. How did that fit into your decision? And I guess with all the various ages, they might not always have a child their age to play with.
Yeah, that's true. And that's not working out perfectly, not part of them at least. Then again, it is working for some of them. Maybe that was a little silly because I'm not from this country, right? So some of the ways child rearing happens here, I hadn't quite wrapped my head around. I was still in the mindset that we have in Europe that it's not as dry, like cities are not as much car reliant, right? Or there's public transportation and so on. So now I live in a like suburban place where public transportation isn't all that great. So being able to walk to a friend's house or knock on somebody's door, I took a little bit more for granted than it happens in this country anyway, but that we do have here. And let's see, how is that playing? I guess, here's my personal take on it. Given this country and these times, because playing outside on the street has diminished over the last decades, right? It seems that their childhood comes pretty close to what I was used to, which I think I celebrate as a success. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
Given that all these things have gone down, they are still getting what I had. So that's great.
Okay. So they, like, in which country did you grow up in? Or
in
was
Germany.
It in Germany. So you would be driven to or take a public transportation to visit friends because the schools might have been wherever or no?
We biked everywhere.
Yeah.
There was buses all over the place. It was really no problem to see people. And it's also more normal to bike all over the place at a younger age than it is here. So,
right. Yeah,
that was just something everybody did.
That's true. And that has diminished. And I think that's one reason people love co-housing, because now it is a safe place. Because even biking, it's not always safe because of the traffic patterns. Okay, that's nice. So now what, I guess one of the things I would like for newer communities to know are some of the issues that can come up for the whole community with children in general. So it doesn't have to be like your children, but how has it affected the community, or what type of things do they have to discuss and figure out?
So something that comes up quite a bit actually is the question of inclusion. So when two kids want to play on their own in the middle of the community, are they allowed to do that? Can you just say no? Right now it's just the two of us, even though all the neighborhood kids are around here. And that creates tension because some kids play better one-on-one. Some people like the big crowd. And co-housing does seem to reward those that are happy in a big crowd, right? But that doesn't work for every kid. Like some of my kids totally love that, the more the merrier, and one in particular really likes the one-on-ones, and that's where she's strong. And too many people overwhelm her, so that doesn't always work. So now they're actually, we've had, in particular the last year, we had to negotiate that quite a bit of like, okay, how do we keep this all manageable so that we package them neatly in a way so that all works out. So that's a thing. Other than that, just the typical things, right? Sometimes some kids are not supposed to eat as many sweets as others, and then that creates some tension, right? Some kids are not mandated by their parents to be part of cleanup days, and some people are. But that, I mean, to be honest, that I don't, I mean, that's all negotiation, and it doesn't run as deeply for me personally. The inclusion-exclusion thing is one that I struggle with a little because I don't have a perfect solution. The food and all of that, it's like, yeah, okay, parents rule, you know? And on the other hand, within a community, you might not be able to have the rigid boundaries that you would like to set up for your child. So everybody gives a little bit, and it seems to work out, at least for me.
Very nice. Now, with is there a place for privacy? Because I know that one issue is, well, maybe this child doesn't like to play with that child, but to get to the other house that they want to go to. And I know as children get older, they do have, I like this kid and not like to play with that kid. Not in a bad way, but just as they get older, they have their preferences. So how has that worked out? Do you have backyards, or how does that work out?
I guess that's more inside of the house. And I actually set up a rule with my own kids at some point and said, like, outside of the house, it's all community. So you'll just have to deal with whoever's there. Inside the house, you can invite one person, and we have a, like, we as a family have a say who wants into our house. So if somebody needed privacy with a one-on-one or a special situation, that's possible. Yeah, but I wouldn't want, for example, the kids' room in the common house to be, like, booked by this, like, one-on-one play day. That just seems, I don't know, inviting trouble. It doesn't seem to be viable to me.
Well, it is a common house for everybody, that's for sure. Yes. And how did your community set up expectations on children's behavior at common meals or common grounds?
Our community is very much influenced by nonviolent communication. So a lot of what we do is just based on talking to each other. And for example, we've had several meetings where children and grown-ups were sharing each other's consideration with each other. And I always like those. Like, for example, we had a meeting around bicycle helmets, where we just had everybody, like we did a fishbowl process in the common house. So people were able to sit in the middle, especially the kids, I think, were always in the middle, but then grown-ups could swap in. And it was sweet because we were also able to break up that somewhat artificial distinction between kids and grown-ups, because there are grown-ups who should wear helmets and aren't, right? And there are kids that find that some grown-ups are bicycling down the loop too fast. Like, it's not, you know, the black and white thinking between kids and grown-ups doesn't serve us. Or, for example, noise in the common house during common meals. It's not true that it's always just the kids that are loud and the grown-ups that are not. That's simply not the case. It doesn't match with our observations. So it's more about needs that come up for everybody, right? Sometimes the kids find it too wild, and like that actually happens, or too loud or too uncomfortable or whatever it might be. So we were then able to drill down more to the needs than make this distinction just based on age.
I love that. That's great. I've worked in a Sudbury type of democratic schools, and I loved the discussion with the kids, and that there was no age discrimination. Now, how has your community dealt with the generation? Because sometimes older generations do feel like children should always listen to adults. So has there been a shift because of the way you have the meetings together and don't distinguish between what age of the person and the behavior?
Well, I would say all of our kids have had some solid NVC training. They actually did have some explicit training. We have somebody here in my community that actually wrote a book on how to teach nonviolent communication to children. It's called Heart to Heart. The author is Gina Sim. So that's great. So they've actually been explicitly trained. And I struggle more with righteousness among grown-ups. So yes, so that's that. I guess when those moments happen where we manage to have that magic of really listening to each other, that seems to diminish. But it does seem to me like grown-ups go there faster, right? Into that ingrained thinking of, but children should do as they told. Like, no, that's not how we do it yet. We listen to each other, and they're actually full human beings that have a voice and all of that. Like, oh, right, they have needs too. Okay. Yeah.
I love it. I love it. Now, have you had any issues with different parenting styles and I guess people having to adjust to that?
Yeah, for sure. And just the whole typical wild mix of things. What I like is that, you know, that all, like in many communities, this community is started in 1994, so there have been several waves of children, right? Like each crop, sort of. And what I enjoy is knowing that for the people who've been around for a while already, they've seen this kind of stuff play out several times, right? With their own kids, with other people's kids, and it takes a little bit of the edge off, right? Or it just shows you more that these are just things that happen, and that will always be the case, but it's not so much about me or my kid or my parenting style. Like, yeah, differences will come up, and then that's just the case if you live together. So I can't even point out like a particular thing that I would say, oh, that's something that seems unsolvable and simmers, like a smoldering something that doesn't go away. I don't see that.
Okay, well, that's very nice and very hopeful. I wonder, I guess for our community, the parenting issue became really huge and maybe tapped into other things going on. But it's nice to tell people, hey, it'll get better, or there'll be waves of trying to figure it out. So that's good to know. So just one last question. What would you like to tell people considering co-housing and considerations of when they bring children in or having children there?
But one thing that comes up for me, a little story that I want to tell that I remembered in thinking about this topic, is that something I think where one as a parent really has to take a deep breath is to actually be willing to open your own heart for other people. For example, there's one, like I call her the chosen grandmother of my children, especially the younger children. They spend a lot of time with her, takes them on day trips and all of that. And when we decide who should be in what summer camp and what might be good for them, or what kind of after school activities, what kind of sports we should sign them up, we invite her. Like, she actually, you know, it's, so my ex and I were separated, so it's my ex and myself and my partner and her, you know, like we're the four main guardians of our kids. And sometimes I forget how quirky that is, given, you know, yes, from the outside. To me, it's just like, yeah, no, of course she would be a decision maker, because she deals with the impact of the decisions that we make, just like, you know, maybe not quite as much, but a lot. And she's been around for several years. You know, it's not just somebody who walks in and has an opinion, is what I mean, you know? So, and that sometimes I notice when I talk with people from the outside that, I don't know, for example, you know, school events of like, yeah, of course Nancy has to be there, you know, like for some of the things. It's just funny. That's a funny one. And I'm guessing that would be hard for parents, right, who might find that quirkier than I do. And that means giving up some of your power, and that is hard. And I personally don't struggle with that, because I'm so endlessly grateful to in particular that person. Yeah, but that's something I think to consider, of just consider that might happen and be ready for that, that other people might actually have a very, very key role in your kids' lives, and just being open to the possibility and the gift of that.
Yes, that sounds wonderful. Well, thank you. If you could tell us a little bit, like give us how we can contact you and your name, and do you come in when there's conflicts? How can people get in touch with you if they want just more help in their communities or schools?
Well, my email address is ted@sociocracyforall.org. That would be my work email, in a way. I personally really do governance and facilitation training, so that's my main thing, and that keeps me busy enough. So governance, I'm always happy to help and think through. Yet I do want to point to my neighbor and friend Gina Sim, who does actually these things that you're pointing to, setting up caring council committees, circle in our case, in sociocracy, thinking through how one can implement more non-binding communication in communities and so on. So that kind of stuff she does, and does it brilliantly. So totally deferring to her then.
Wonderful. Well, I will definitely share that information, because I was trying to do lessons for the children in non-violent communication as us adults are trying to learn it. So the more information out there, the better. I did get a puppet of a giraffe. I couldn't find one of a jackal, but I had a wolf.
I know, yes. Yes, and she does, actually, let me just, her email address is gina@cohousing.com, because cohousing.com is us. And the website that she has also is Teaching From Your Heart. Let me just second test that. Teaching From the Heart, probably. I can also deliver that later. You can
put that in. Great, and I'll definitely put that out there. Well, I appreciate you so much taking the time from your busy day, and I'll put this on the podcast, and I'll put the information on the blog, and then I'll also try to do something, because I think you give a lot of hope and a lot of good advice for forming communities and, you know, what it's really like out there. Thank you so much. I'm going to press stop.